more on HD Radio, check out our website at 1150kknw.com, where you can also stream the station live. Alternative Talk 1150.
The views and opinions expressed during Martha Norwalk's Animal World are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, management, or other advertisers. This is your Alternative Talk station, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Now wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Canada Pet Foods. Superior quality in every bag and can.
Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. Great show today to share with your friends, by the way. And the best way to pick up the screen is go to the Animal World, or the stream is go to the Animal World website screen. I'm thinking already, yeah, well, we're buzzing today. Anyway, go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. Now, as always, across the desk from me, in the lightweight North Face gear today, that would be Animal World production engineer Gary Hill is here. Good morning, Gary.
Morning. How are you?
I'm okay. No sunny day today like last.
No,
I thought maybe summer. We thought summer was here last weekend.
Well, it should be now that the 4th of July is behind us.
We also thought
summer kicks in.
Yeah, it's supposed to start. Well, the day after 4th of July is when it starts, but maybe it starts tomorrow. It's supposed to be a nice week coming up, but. I have to tell everybody that it's not the heavy North Face gear. It's the lightweight North Face gear. But we kind of thought you'd retard that for the summer, but apparently not.
It has a little nip in the air this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did wear shorts, though, so.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, look at that. Your hairy legs are sitting up there.
Summer in spirit.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right. Well, and normally chiming in from the other room, Animal World's co-producer and call screener, Sandy Gaston, would be here, but she's not here today. Now, she is. She was under the weather last week and wasn't here with us, and unfortunately has a problem with one of her animal friends. So if you wouldn't mind thinking some good thoughts for Sandy, and we hope that she will be back in the saddle once again next week. But in the meantime, our thoughts, good thoughts and prayers will be with her and her animal friends. And speaking of animal friends, well, I don't know. They're not really animals. They're insects, correct?
Yes.
All right. We have in the studio, because we're not alone today. It's not just me and Gary. Table is full. And we have Kelly Louvier is here, our beekeeper. And Doug Cheney is here, our wasp expert. I was going to call him the wasp guy, but 20 years of doing whatever it is that you do, and we're going to find out what it is that he does over the course of the show, and Kelly, too. And I had to say, we are buzzing because we actually have bees in the studio. Kelly brought an observation hive of honeybees. So Gary and I have been fascinated in watching the queen and all the bees. They are busy bees. That phrase was not coined for no good reason. And Doug has a cooler in the room with a well, I would say a yellow jacket hive, but we would call that a wasp hive.
Yeah,
or a
yellow
wasp,
jacket hive
nest?
Works. Yeah, that works.
Nest, yellow jacket. All right. Well, that's one of the first things we're going to find out, because I told you, you know, what have I been saying all week? Bees, 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 wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, who's who, what's what, and everything we need to know, and that's what we're doing today. And let's see. In addition to that, we are going to start with a little bit of follow-up and news, and of course, the best good news about animals. They're actually, Gary, there was a lot of news about animals this week, but I culled down our pile, and got a pretty good-sized pile of stuff. But I left at least half of the animal news on the floor, because we've got such an important topic and so much discussion today that I really culled it down.
The best of the best.
The best of the best is what we've got here. And let's see, at 10 o'clock, we will be doing our flea tip. So the weather has been, what do you think, it's been consistently above 50 degrees? Hard to know, because it really hasn't. It's gotten below that night. You need consistently above 50 degrees for the fleas to start hatching. And I think it's been, in most parts, most cities, it's been warm enough, long enough that we're getting a flea hatch. And so you need to know how to deal with fleas without the toxic chemicals. So Martha's four-step flea plan, we will run that at 10 o'clock. And then about 10:50, current events as usual. No giveaways today because the keeper of the prize closet is not here. But I do want to remind you that if you enjoy today's show, or if you have to leave and can't listen to the entire thing, the show is archived on the Animal World website, MarthaNorwalk.com. So by later today, certainly by this evening, all 3 hours of today's show will be up on the website, and you'll be able to share it with your family and friends, or listen again, or listen for the first time, whatever. You'll be able to do that. And I want to remind you, if you have not taken the time to take the annual 1150 KKNW listener survey, today is the last day. Gary, did you do the survey yet?
I have not done the survey. I've waited until the last day.
I did it this week.
Did you?
I did.
How many times?
Once.
Oh, just once.
Well, you're only supposed to do it once.
Are you allowed to win?
I don't think so.
Oh, that's,
I think,
too bad.
Now, see, so the two of you, Doug and Kelly, expect you when you get home to get on your computers and go to the 1150kknw.com and fill out the annual listener survey, because that helps the station better serve you in terms of what you want in the programming. But you also are automatically entered into the contest to win two nights in a family suite at the brand new Great Wolf Lodge just south of Olympia. And we, of course, want an Animal World listener to win.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so do that. Also, we are now broadcasting in HD, which gives us a much stronger and better signal. And if you're considering getting an HD radio, you might want to also click on to the 1150kknw.com website, because there's a $20 off certificate, and you can get a HD radio, brand new HD radio, at a discounted rate. But please remember, listener survey, last day today, so please get there and fill it out. Otherwise, we don't know what you want. And it's important that you do that. I would appreciate it, or consider it a personal favor, if you would go there and... What are you laughing about?
For me, if I go there, that'd be a personal favor.
I was looking at you when I said that, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Personal favor, if you would go fill out that form. All right, let's see. What do we got? First thing in the news department. Well, actually, we have got a bunch of good animal TV this week, so I thought I would alert you to everything that has come across my radar in terms of good animal TV. Starts with tonight, 60 Minutes. They are doing a special on the mountain gorillas. So that should be a fascinating piece, and they are endangered, and apparently the gentle giants, it will be a very good special. So that is tonight, 60 Minutes. I believe that airs at 7 p.m. on Channel 7, CBS. So watch 60 Minutes this evening. All right, there is one of the articles in the news, animal news this week, is about wild horses out of Nevada. Wild horses, too numerous, may be culled. Officials say, so this is, federal officials are considering euthanizing wild horses to deal with a growing population on the range and in holding facilities. Apparently, there are 33,000 estimated wild horses on the range, but the U.S. Bureau of Land Management can't afford to care for the number of Mustangs that have been rounded up and have not been adopted, so they're considering euthanizing them. What does that have with, to do with good TV? Well, it's kind of, I don't know, the timing seems right. There is a special this week called Saving the American Wild Horse, and the details were in the PI. Apparently, Sheryl Crow is part of this show. The program airs on Monday at 9 p.m. on the documentary channel, which I've never heard of. Have any of you guys ever heard of the documentary? Now, I know the Discovery Channel. That's on like cable. That's not basic cable. You have to have expanded cable or something to get that. But Gary, have you ever heard of the documentary channel?
I have not.
When I looked in my TV guide, I didn't see anywhere to say anything about documentary channel. So, your first homework out there, you guys. Now, ordinarily, Sandy would be on the other room, and she'd be on. She'd either know what the documentary channel is, or she'd be on the computer and she'd find out. But she's not here to do that, so I'll have to rely on you at home. And our live Animal World email address, you can send us an email at any time throughout the show to animalworldlive@hotmail.com. animalworldlive@hotmail.com. So whoever is out there listening and can send us an email, what's the documentary channel? Where do you find it? Do you have to have cable to get it? And because anyway, 9 p.m. on Monday is Saving the American Wild Horse, so we'll want to watch that if we can. And then you probably have been seeing the promos, as have I, for a new reality TV show that starts this week on Thursday, is the Greatest American Dog Contest. And it looks like it's probably going to be a good show. And the Greatest American Dog, and with the promos, y'all, you know, they do internet, you know, and the videos that circulate. One of my favorite animal videos is of Tyson, the roller or the skateboarding bulldog.
I've heard of that.
Maybe you've seen, I mean, it's a great bit. I mean, this bulldog actually really skateboards. You know, he pushes his little self around and stuff, and he is promoted as part of this Great American Dog Contest. Mm. So you actually get to see the skateboarding dog, and who knows what else is going to be. So sounds like it may be interesting to tune in and see what's up. So Gorillas tonight on 60 Minutes, Sheryl Crow and Saving Wild Horses on the documentary channel on Monday, and the Greatest American Dog Contest starting this week on CBS Channel 7, Thursday, I believe, at 8 o'clock. So, there you go. All right, let's get to animals in the news. We've got some follow-up to start with. More King County Animal Shelter news, and this week the big news is they have two new managers. You know, there have been lots of controversy over the shelter, and they're considering whether to keep it, move it into private hands or keep it public. But after a year and a half in the hot seat as acting manager of King County Animal Shelters, Al Dams was replaced Monday by a new acting manager, Wendy Keller, who has managed or overseen numerous capital projects during her 19 years as a county employee, will be responsible for the shelters. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with change in management. That probably was inevitable. Spotted owls, they're in the news again this week. A settlement was reached in the spotted owl lawsuit that's been pending since 2006. An environmental lawsuit that sought to block logging on 50,000 acres of private timberland to protect the threatened northern spotted owl has been settled. And basically, they're going to form a group to study how private lands can help in the protection of the spotted owl. So it sounds like they just kind of postponed the whole thing. But anyway, that's been settled. It's a cute photo department. Now, this I hadn't heard of. If you want to see the photo, go to Seattle Times. The title, Cowabunga. This doggy does more than paddle. Shown in a contest in the annual Lowe's Coronado Bay Resort dog surfing competition. Was last Saturday, apparently. The competition at Imperial Beach in California is the largest such contest for dogs. Who knew? Did you know they had a surfing contest for dogs? Now, Gary's our sports guy.
Is that?
You are. You should know about
that.
These things.
I've never covered that event, no.
All right, look at this, you guys. Now, this looks to me like a poodle. It looks like it's got little water goggles on, and it's actually on a surfboard in the surf, is it not?
Yeah. Seems to be.
All right, dear. There you go. If you don't have anything to do on your show tomorrow night.
Yeah, we'll cover that.
You can cover cover the sports kind of.
How long does it take for a dog to get good at surfing?
I have no clue, but maybe it's like Tyson in the skateboarding and maybe the greatest American dog. Maybe they'll have surfing dogs. Who knows? Possible. All right, what else do we have? Oh, now this is a couple of news items here before we get to all the good news about animals. I just pulled out the ones that I thought you should know about. There's a reward being offered in an attack on a goose. This is local. A $500 reward is being offered for information that leads to the conviction of the person who tortured, quote-unquote, a community-cared-for goose by pulling out its wing feathers earlier this month. Goose E. Goose, who has lived at the Coronado Springs apartment for the past 9 years, was attacked June 18th or 19th, according to Posado Safe Haven. If you have any information related to this, you are to call Posado Safe Haven at 206-300-7218. And according to experts, the examining veterinarian stated that the pain of this heinous act is equivalent to a human having their fingernails pulled out. Ew.
That's awful.
Yeah, yeah. So, very sorry about the goose. And if you know anything about it, contact Posado. Oh, I thought this was sad. If you want to pull out a huge, huge story, Seattle Times search, headline is Search On for Missing Chimp. Now, I don't know if you, do you all remember the story about the chimp? His name is Mo, and he was raised by a couple in California, and he was part of their family and a very well-behaved chimp, and eventually they had to move him to a chimp sanctuary. And then the huge story was this couple, when they went to visit him, this was years ago, somehow some other chimps at the facility escaped and attacked them, because chimps are very territorial and they can be very aggressive and cause serious damage. Anyway, they almost killed the man. And at any rate, they still, not their chimp, not Mo. Mo was not a part of the attack. It was other chimps at the sanctuary. But the bottom line is that somehow Mo escaped from the sanctuary. And so he's out running loose, and they're trying to find him. And if you want to hear, read all the details, Seattle Times, Search On for Missing Chimp. I think if you search, you know, missing chimp, you'll pull up the story. But Mo is missing, so say some prayers that they get him back. And it's an incredible story, and he's apparently an incredible chimp. But somehow, the wherever he was supposed to hold gorillas, but apparently it did not.
He's probably trying to find his family.
Well,
his human family.
That's what they said, that he's trying to find his way home.
I'm sure.
And there's a picture of LaDonna and St. James Davis, that's the couple, and how upset they are. But somewhere in this article it described that they think he's probably trying to find his way back home to where he lived with them.
Do you know why they put him in the zoo? I mean, what was the reason?
I think they were forced to. Well, when we have a break, I can go through this, and because it's a very long article, and it tells the whole story, but they raised him for quite a long time since the San Bernardino Mountains, west of Los Angeles, and he's been missing since June 27th, and And they, he well, he, and apparently he used to drive a little car, so they figured he might be looking for a car to drive his way home. The I'll scan it more and see if I can find the answer for that, because I don't know off the top of my head. Oh, now here's a go figure for you. This is out of Eatonville and Northwest Trek Wildlife Park. Did you hear about the lynx that died in the tree?
No.
Miss that.
Oh, this is, now, as an animal behavior therapist, that's what I do. And on the air, on Animal World here, over the years, Gary, we've gotten lots of calls from people whose cats have been up in trees. And they're afraid they won't come down. And, you know, authorities have always said, cats don't die in trees. And, in fact, I can remember being told, and I've repeated this on the air, you know, how many neighborhoods do you drive through and see skeletons of cats in trees?
Very few.
You just don't, right? So that was always the answer. They'll come down eventually.
Except for now.
We need to rethink that. Listen to this, because this is really sad. I think this could have been prevented. A Canadian lynx climbed a tree at the Northwest Trek Wildlife Park at Eatonville and remained in the top branches for more than 2 weeks until it died.
Wow.
All right, now my first question is, if they know it climbed the tree and was up there for 2 weeks, why the heck didn't they get it down? I don't understand that part. But anyway, after park workers found the carcass Saturday at the base of the tree, a necropsy showed the cat died of dehydration. It had no condition that would have prevented it from climbing down. Officials speculate the animal was simply afraid. The wildlife park has two remaining lynx, according to a spokesperson, and they have now put sheet metal around tall trees to limit how high the cats can climb. So thank goodness, at least they're going to prevent that from happening again. But seems to me, since they know it was up there for 2 weeks, why didn't they do something to get it down? I mean, that's the obvious question, isn't it?
Get a cherry picker.
Well, exactly, yeah. Or, you know, they could have tranquilized them. That's what they do with most wild animals, is tranquilize them and get them down. But and I heard a few more details about that. Apparently another lynx had climbed that tree, and this lynx followed, you know, monkey see, monkey do, followed that lynx up, and the other lynx came down, but this one didn't. Anyway, that's a shame.
And we have an update as well. Sue called in.
Oh, Sue.
Yeah.
Sue, the documentary channel.
She gets the documentary channel.
Hey, see, ask and we shall. Sue, thank you. What did you find out?
She gets it on Dishnet Channel 197.
Dishnet Channel 197. I have well, that obviously means I can't watch it. Channel 9. So any of you, and Sue, apparently you get it.
She gets it.
So you're an Animal World roving reporter this week, and you can watch the Saving the American Wild Horses and let us know.
And report in. Excellent.
Yeah.
Give homework for Sue.
Yeah, so and then let us know. So there you go. Channel 97, huh? Dishnet.
197.
197. Like it's going to make a difference for me. I don't know. But all right. That wraps up our news. That leaves us with the best good news about animals. You guys watch, and the sun will start to come out any time now. We play this song, and it usually works. All right, first up in the good news department is a good tip in Heloise's column yesterday from Seattle PI. And this is a letter from a writer. It says, Dear Heloise, my dog has a messy, ugly, sunburned nose. I took her to the vet, and we tried several somewhat expensive prescriptions. Finally, the vet suggested putting vitamin E oil on her nose from the capsule, and it has worked. So that's something we have talked about here on Animal World before, but you take the little vitamin E capsule and you stick a pin in it so you can squish it out. So if you got little doggy noses that are sunburned or crusty or something, try a little vitamin E oil. Very cheap, and it usually works.
I do that with my dog, Sam.
Do you? Mm-hmm. On his nose?
Yes.
All right. And it works for you.
It's great.
All right. Very good. All right. Let's see. Okay. The next good news. Now, this is I love it when animals get returned. Turtle takes the pledge. A 150-pound sea turtle raised by humans returned to freedom Monday after 9 years of captivity. Swimming away from Jekyll Island, Georgia, after veterinarians who cared for her helped steer her towards the ocean. Humans raised the turtle named Dylan since she was found in August 1998 as a hatchling straggler on Jekyll Island's beach. She spent years at two nature centers before moving to the Georgia Aquarium and later the Georgia Sea Turtle Center at Jekyll Island. Caretakers took the turtle to within 10 feet of water, and she scooted right in as about 300 people watched from the beach. Loggerhead sea turtles like Dylan are classified as threatened species. Seven other varieties of sea turtles are also endangered. So, yay! She got to go back. That's cool. All right, now, did you see the man rescuing the bear out of the water this week?
No.
Okay, I've got a photograph for you. Man rescues brown bear. You can see the picture in Seattle Times. And this is biologist Adam Warwick saves a black bear from drowning Saturday in the Gulf of Mexico. The bear had been wandering in a residential area near Alligator Point, Florida. It was hit with a tranquilizer dart, but bolted into the water before it was sedated. So Warwick jumped in to keep the bear from drowning and dragged him to shore. Now look at this guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
A large bear.
Yeah, yeah. Big bear.
Big bear.
And the guy's in the water, like, doing, you know, a water rescue.
Yeah, I saw that picture this week.
Is that amazing?
It's pretty cute.
So, you don't want, don't you understand?
No, I don't understand how you pull that off. I mean, that's a big
bear. Well, the bear's sedated. So it was...
Still big.
Yeah. But you got to know in his heart, the bear has to know that they're saving him.
Yeah.
Now, of course, they tranked him in the first place, but they're saving him.
That, I'm saying that couldn't have been an easy swim.
No.
Back to shore.
No. But I'm glad he did it.
Yeah,
glad he
sure.
saved the bear. All right, let's see. Several international good newses. We reported last week on the International Whaling Commission annual meeting and that ended without a lot happening, but there was a little bit of good that happened in that Japan volunteered to not hunt back whales again next year.
Hooray.
So, yeah, so at least we can say that's a good thing. And a motion by Norway that would have allowed native tribes in Greenland to kill 10 additional humpbacks was voted down. So that's a good thing. But the plans for more whale sanctuaries have been postponed, as I reported last week. All right, let's see. Ape rights. Resolution heading to the Spanish Parliament would grant rights to our non-human brothers. I found this fascinating. Following the agenda of the Great Ape Project, the proposed law would declare that apes may not be killed or arbitrarily deprived of their liberty. Reuters reports the proposal would require the government to end the use of apes in circuses, television, and dangerous experiments. There is no sound moral reason why possession of basic rights should be limited to members of a particular species. But some opponents, of course, say the legislation amounts to extremism, but I would vote for that extremism on the right side. So, yeah. So if Spain does it, maybe we'll consider that, too. All right. The World Wildlife Fund announced that a long stretch of an undersea mountain range between Iceland and the Azores will become one of the largest protected marine areas in the world. The 15-member OSPAR Commission will designate 115,000 square miles of the Atlantic floor a marine protected area, prohibiting certain forms of fishing that can damage the rock surface. The WWF describes the new sanctuary as a haven for corals, sponges, and other species living attached to rocky surfaces, as well as for fish, whales, and sharks. So that's a good thing. Now, this I put this in the good news section because of the way they're handling the problem. The protracted drought parching much of northern Mexico has driven more than 30 black bears into residential areas of Monterey in search of food and water. The director of the city zoo said that bears have been seen killing farm animals, drinking from swimming pools, and entering homes around the city of 4 million people. Now, ordinarily, what would we do? We'd start killing bears.
Oh, yeah.
But the black bears are protected in Mexico, and the local law enforcement personnel are being trained on how to safely capture and relocate the threatened species. So, yay, they're not just popping off and killing them. They're going to humanely collect them and take them to safer place. All right. Oh, this is a cool one. If you pull up the details and the photograph of this one, Seattle Times, nests of white storks adorn village rooftops once again. That 25 years ago, the iconic emblem of Alsace, A-L-S-A-C-E, and a bird revered for centuries as the bringer of fertility and luck to any home where it nested had dwindled to fewer than 9 pairs in the entire Upper Rhine River Valley. Though white storks resided elsewhere in the world, they had all but disappeared from the region identified with them. Today, one of the most successful repopulation programs of its kind has restored the beloved white stork to the Alsace and Lorraine region, with at least 270 pairs nesting this year on the roofs and treetops of the picturesque villages. And there's apparently one man over there that's taking care of these storks, and there's photograph of him holding up one of these storks, and then how they nest on the houses, and if they're too precarious, he goes and removes them. Look at these stork nests on the top of the chimney and the roofs. Is that amazing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wow.
Look at that, Gare. So if you didn't see that, Seattle Times, pull up the photographs. But how'd you like, are they on the top of the chimneys or right on the peak of the roof? Pretty amazing. And it's a long story, so lots of good articles there. All right, and the kind of the winner of the best good news about animals is that the ASPCA is assisting Tennessee's largest ever puppy mill raid. There really is a move to start shutting down these puppy mills, and this one, the raid began last Wednesday. 747 animals were discovered in the raid, which were kept in enclosures throughout the 92 acres of hilly and rocky terrain known as Pine Bluff Kennels in Lisle, Tennessee. The vast majority were dogs, but other animals included horses, burros, miniature horses, chickens, goats, parrots, and pedigreed cats. There were many dead, but at any rate, the ASPCA, they have a mobile animal crime scene, a CSI unit, and their veterinarians, forensic vets and stuff are all going in to document this so they can hopefully keep them out of business for good. So that's a good thing. And then, the last article this week, of course, would be about bees. So that's going to get us started. We're going to take care of our advertisers and sponsors, and then we will come back, and I will formally introduce you to Kelly and Doug. And the first thing we're going to find out is about the two of them and what they do, and then our education begins. Because are y'all like me? You just thought anything that buzzed and stung was a bee? Well, that's not true. Not true at all. We're going to find out who's who, what's what, and all about them. So stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. At Canine Hydrotherapy and Heavenly Spa's warm water healing pool offers pets a therapeutic and nurturing environment to assist in rehabilitation from injury, illness, or surgery, as well as maintaining the overall wellness of pets of all ages and abilities. Heavenly Spa, located in Fall City, maintains its pool at 92 to 94 degrees to aid your pet in achieving greater relief from muscle tension and increased range of motion. Warmth can assist in improving circulation, increasing flexibility, and promoting relaxation. When the benefits of warm water healing are incorporated with massage therapy, the results are remarkable. Heavenly Spa also offers massage and body work, self-swim, puppy parties, and holistic services. For more information, go to heavenlyspa.info or call 425-222-7221. That's 425-222-7221.
Naturally Four Paws is Kitsap County's health food store for pets, where pets are more than animals, they're family. Naturally Four Paws provides only the highest quality natural, organic, and holistic pet supplies for dogs, cats, birds, and small animals. Two state-of-the-art self-service grooming facilities, all with the highest level of personalized service. Naturally Four Paws is open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and noon to 6 p.m. on Sundays. Stop by their store in Silverdale or call 360-337-2444 to speak with their friendly and knowledgeable staff. Be sure to mention that Martha sent you. You can also contact them online or read about their philosophy, products, events, and services at naturally4paws.com.
Hey, if you've got dogs and cats, you need to know about my friends out at the Academy of Canine Behavior and Cattery in Bothell. They are located just off of 405, north of the 522 interchange, and they've got a fabulous facility, absolutely the best doggy daycare center I've ever seen. So if you travel that north 405 corridor to and from work, easy to just pop off in the morning, drop your dog off at daycare, pick them up on the way home, and gosh, you can just kick back and relax when you get home. All you got to do is feed your dog. He's all worn out from playing with the dogs all day at daycare, and they do free behavior evaluations, so check them out. It's the Academy of Canine Behavior. They're in Bothell. You can give them a call at 425-486-9567. That's 425-486-9567. Visit them on the web, www.aocb.com, and tell them Martha Norwalk sent you.
Tell your friends the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey y'all, Martha Norwalk, and want to say thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. You can find us here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And it's a buzzing day here on Animal World. We're doing bees and wasps and hornets and yellow jackets and who's who and what's what and everything we need to know about these really fascinating and important creatures. Sandy is not here today. She is dealing with her animal friends. And so it is just me along with my guests, and Gary is here. If you have a question or a comment for either of our guests, the best way to get through today, of course, would be to email us, animalworldlive@hotmail.com. I'm going to give you phone numbers in case you have a question or something you want to know about bees or wasps. And if we don't cover whatever it is that you need to know about, you can certainly give us a call. But keep in mind, Sandy's not here to answer the phone. So if you do call, Gary is probably just going to put the line on hold. You'll know the line has been answered when you can hear the radio station playing in your ear. That means you're on hold. Now, then when he can get to the other room to actually talk to you, because he can't pick up the phone in here, because if he does, then we'll hear him talking to you on the air, and that's kind of tacky. You know, so he has to go in the other room to answer the phone. So he'll just put you on hold, and then he'll come in and find out what's going on. And we will open phone lines during the show if you want to call in and ask questions. But first of all, I want to introduce you properly to my guests. And we're Kelly Lovier.
Louvier.
Kelly Louvier is here. She is the beekeeper. Doug Cheney is here. He's our wasp guy. I think let's start ladies first. Okay. Kelly, tell us about yourself and what it is that you do.
So I'm a beekeeper. I have about 20 to 25 hives, and I keep them Bellevue, Issaquah, and then throughout the Snoqualmie Valley, Carnation, Duval, Woodinville, Redmond, Fall City.
Now you're talking, when we say bees, mm-hmm. I assume honeybees?
Honeybees, yes.
Okay. 20 to 25 hives.
It didn't start like that. I got the bug. They say if you really get the disease of beekeeping, you start with one.
Yeah.
And it spreads and spreads. The first day that I got my very first hive, I went to bed and said, I want 10 next year.
Really?
And I got 10 next year, yeah.
Wow.
So it's just increased every year, and I love it, you know?
Well, I think we've all seen photographs of beekeepers, you know, and the boxes and
yes.
the bees. And a lot of times there's a lot of boxes together. So it didn't sound like you don't have like 25 hives in your backyard.
No, they're spread out. They're spread out through mostly through the Snoqualmie Valley. Farmers hire me, also the city of Bellevue, orchards, blueberry farms, to bring my bees in for pollination services. You know, honeybees provide, you know, much of our agriculture with the ability to have much more of a crop than would be natural if we didn't have all these boxes in their place.
Well, and we've heard a lot about the big professional beekeepers
yeah.
that have semi trucks that they load up all their hives and travel to different places around the country and then let their bees pollinate the crops and such.
Mm-hmm.
And actually in the article, the bee article in the paper, and the one I'm referring to, folks, if you want to bring it up online, is Seattle PI. It's Chris Smith's column, Give Bees a Sweet Salute for Their Hard Work, is the column. And but he mentions that in talking to one expert that they think that this colony collapse syndrome may be caused by a bunch of different things, and one of the things they mention is the stress of being trucked around to all these different locations. But but you're saying even that you do move your hives around.
I do move my hives, but those migratory beekeepers, the big operations, they never let their bees rest. They literally follow the weather, and they just travel throughout the, you know, all over the United States and move from one state to the next to the next to the next. And the only break that the bees get is on that truck. But the problem is that's not a break. It's bumpy, it's loud, it's noisy, and they're not considered. It's about the money to move them.
So it could be very stressful for them.
Absolutely, it is.
All right, so with your hives, you don't have them all in your backyard. You have like them in other people's backyards?
I have a few people that have them in their backyards. I kind of got away from that because, you know, with people not knowing the correct information about bees, people get scared. So they're mostly at farms now, or people that have lots of acreage.
So they're on private property. We're not going to run into them in the woods somewhere. But no.
No, but I've been in the woods before. I mean, it just varies, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you are a beekeeper, and that you have all these hives,
yes.
and you get hired to do pollinating and so forth. What else do you do related to bees?
Then also I process and sell the honey, honeycomb, the wax, the byproducts. I make salves and soaps and things like that I also sell at farmers markets or through phone orders.
All right, but then don't you also help wayfaring bees out there?
I do. There's a list. The Puget Sound Beekeepers has a list online. It's PugetSoundBees.org. And there's a group of us that work together for swarms, bee swarms. And we get calls. We're kind of on call for a couple months of the year. And we get these frantic calls. I have, you know, bees swarming all over my place. They're going to kill us. You know, come take them away.
Well, there was a story about that in the news this week. Did you see on TV that apparently a queen bee had gotten into a woman's house? And all the bees were like congealed
together,
under the window and the side of her house. So that's what we're talking about, swarms.
Yeah, and people are very afraid of them, and that's the most docile state of the bees that you're ever going to get, because they have left the home that they were in. They've split off and are finding a new home because they've either run out of space or maybe they're in danger in the original location.
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to go into way more detail about the honeybees and what swarms are all about and all of that sort of stuff. Because I think, well, we think of the circus-type performer that holds like the queen bee in their mouth and then is covered with bees, and they don't seem to get stung. So
I'd do it.
Well, I'd be happy for you to do it. It's not something in this lifetime that you're going to find me doing, but and we'll find out a lot more about bees. But so how long have you been working with bees?
4 years now. Okay. Yeah, my dad kept bees until I was about two, and I have some memories of it, and I remember walking down with my mom and feeding the bees in the wintertime, and that was my first memory, and then I think it just stuck with me forever.
All right. It's in your blood.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have Doug Cheney, who is our wasp expert. And apparently, Doug, you've been doing what you do for, what, 20 years now?
A little over 20 years, although there was a couple of years there where there wasn't any collecting program. But I've been fairly consistent the last few years. And when we say wasp, again, we're talking about hornet yellow jacket types of wasps.
All right, so let's clarify that right off the bat. When we're talking bees, Kelly, we're honeybees.
Yes.
Bumblebees. I mean, there's bees in their name.
Orchard mason bees, all sorts of, you know, there's different
leafcutter bees, there's all the whole.
So there's a lot of different kinds of bees.
Squash bees, sunflower bees, blueberry bees. You know, those aren't really maintained by keepers. They're, you know, in the wild, but there are many
different kinds of bees.
Yes.
All right, and then we have
the same thing. It's the same thing with the wasp. Again, a lot of people associate a wasp with a flying insect that has hang-down legs, and a lot of times is black and yellow. But again, as like bees or wasp or trees or birds or cars or whatever, that's the generic term. There are literally thousands of different species of bees or wasps in the United States, you know, and yellow jackets and hornets happen to be a particular type of wasp.
Particular
species of wasp.
So a hornet is actually a wasp.
A hornet is actually a wasp.
And a yellow jacket is a wasp.
Well, it starts to get a little bit confusing, Martha, because when you really get down to it, hornets are yellow jackets. And yellow jackets are a species of wasp. Hornets is kind of like a term that's got tacked on over time and in the literature. The hornets that we have, or call hornets out here, when you really get into the biology of it, they aren't really true hornets.
Are we talking about like the bald-faced hornet?
As one doctor told me one time, they should have called it the bald-faced hornet yellow jacket, because the social wasps, which are the hornets and the yellow jackets, are truly, you know, when you get into it, they're really just, they're yellow jackets.
Okay. Huh. But the bald-faced,
even though they're black and white,
doesn't have black and yellow stripes.
That's right. Everything else is exactly the same, though.
Okay. So they're really the same. They just are a different color.
That's right.
Ah. Well, then what about those buzzy things? When you say, you know, the ones with the hang-down legs. When I was growing up, I thought yellow jackets were yellow jackets. I thought, I thought those were all bees. But then there were the mud daubers that have the longer segmented bodies that have the hang-down things.
Exactly.
And I thought those were hornets. Well, and then I thought some of them were wasps, and apparently I was totally in the dark on
right.
all of this.
As somebody else told me one time, you could generally say that if you took all the bees and set them off to one side, then anything else that has a sting that flies, a small flying insect, is some type of a wasp.
Okay. But then you called them social wasps. Now, that doesn't mean they sit down with us and are friendly. What does that mean?
No, they sit down with their group and are friendly, so to speak. And at the top of the phylum order, or however you want to call it, there's a classification that's called Hymenoptera. And in that classification, that is the social insects, which include the bees. Ants is another one. And then, as far as the wasps go, it's the yellow jackets are the social insects, and so they're classified up there with the bees and the ants.
So now are bees and wasps related?
I hope not, but they're very similar in a way. In some ways, you know, but in some other ways they're very dissimilar.
But they aren't part of the same group?
Yeah.
They're totally distinct?
Well, again, the commonality is that they're social, and that there's, you
they
know, a queen,
a
there's, yeah, there's a group, but they're working for a common good, and, you know, there is control. I mean, people may look at these, you know, honeybees swarming around a nest or a colony and think that there's, you know, it's just, there's no rhyme or reason to it, but actually there is order there. And it's the same way with you when you look at a hornet hive, you know, a paper ball type nest. And you
which
see,
we have in the studio, by the way, folks.
And you'll see them coming and going, leaving and crawling around, and it just looks like it's sort of chaotic, but there is a goal there, and there is control. They do have assignments that they're doing, and that's one of my arguments that, or at least one of my opinions that, you know, a lot of times people think that just because they have a yellow jacket nest or a hornet nest around, that they're just laying in there waiting to sting a humanoid because they're in the area. And, you know, there are some extenuating circumstances where that might be possible, but mostly that's not the case because those worker wasps, those workers, it's just like with the bees, when they leave the colony and are flying out into the field, you know, they have something that they are about. And it doesn't mean that you're just indiscriminately
flying around looking for humans to sting.
Look, you can't stop. They're not going to stop in midair just because there's a dog or a humanoid around and go chase them around for a while and then get back on the job. It won't work that way. You know, it just doesn't. However, there are circumstances which possibly, you know, it can be a little bit different. But, you know, overall, that's the way it is. You know, the hornet yellow jackets have basically two assignments, food gathering and nest building materials gathering, and that's pretty much it.
Well, over the course of the rest of the show, folks, we're going to get down and detailed with the bees and the wasps and learn as much as we can about these creatures because we're afraid of them and don't like them inappropriately, wouldn't you say?
Well, the thing is that if you've ever talked to anybody that's got tangled up with a nest of yellow jackets or have heard stories or whatever, to be blunt, it can be damn ugly sometimes.
Mm.
And I don't wish to, you know, give the impression or, you know, to diminish the element of danger that is present in the nest. But again, most of the time when people have trouble with these critters is by accident. I mean, there's no rocket science here. If you know the nest is there, you just leave them alone, stay out of their way, don't bother them.
Call you.
Exactly.
All right, now we kind of got off track, Doug, because we really didn't talk about what you do. We know you've been doing stuff for 20 years with these critters, but what is it that you do?
I actually have been associated with a pharmaceutical lab that makes an allergy product out of the venom.
The venom, meaning that's what they sting you with? I mean, when wasps sting you, is there venom that they inject when they sting?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, the wasps are collected in the field. They're preserved correctly. Eventually, the venom is extracted. And your friendly neighborhood allergist, if somebody got stung and had a terrible reaction, you would think possibly you would want to get immunized.
Immunized, yeah.
Immunized against having that reaction again. You could go to your allergist. I originally thought that they made a big stew out of all the venoms so they could catch it all, but actually they keep it specific, and they would take and scratch your skin. It's just like an allergy test. They would prick or scratch your skin with a specific venom, yellow hornet, ball-faced hornet, common yellow jacket, western yellow jacket, honeybee, whatever. And then they can tell by the reaction which one you are specifically allergic to.
Oh.
And then if you chose to do so, you could enter a shot program where they would give you a series of shots of it's pretty thin stuff. It's about 100,000 to 1 is the dilution ratio, but apparently it's enough venom that it triggers an antigen response specific to that particular wasp.
Huh.
And your
amazing.
system.
So they can actually now, an allergist can actually do a skin test of all the different kinds of wasps and bees and figure out who you're allergic to. They can desensitize you.
Exactly. And if that first series of shots goes well, then they increase the dose to 50,000 to 1, and then you're good to go for whatever the time frame is.
Wow. So Now, in most cases, I'd say when people have a wasp... I want to ask this question first. Kelly, when you're talking about bees, you're talking about hives. But I noticed, Doug, when you talk about wasp, you say nest.
Yes.
So is this a technical term? Because we want to be...
I had somebody tell me that dinosaurs and birds make nests and bees make hives, you know. But the thing is... And wasps, but the thing is, I kind of like to keep making that distinction between bees and wasps, because again, you say hornet hives, again, people keep getting the association of, that these are bees, which they are not.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think they have to be dealt with in two different ways, you know.
Right, okay, so...
My main book that I read, all the doctors that wrote that referred to them as nests. So, I mean, I'm just going by how that goes.
So we'll call bees hives and wasps.
Do a little clarification.
Okay.
A hive is a wooden structure, those boxes that fit together that a beekeeper is taking care of. And let's say that the correct term for honeybees is a colony. And when we were talking earlier about the social versus a solitary insect, if they're social and they're working together, it's like a little miniature city in there that they're all working together, and there's homes and babies and food and everything else. When they're solitary, that means that's kind of like the hermit in the woods that's working by themselves to gather their water and get their food and graze and things like that. That's the difference. And so colony is probably the correct term. A hive is something that the beekeeper is keeping the bees in.
Okay, so bees have colonies,
yes,
and beekeepers keep them in hives.
Correct.
And those are the wooden boxes.
Yes.
So what I would have called a beehive, like one of the paper... We'd call that a nest, though.
Colony would work for me.
Colony,
yeah,
okay.
That works good.
Colony,
works
nest.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so then what you do, Doug, is when people have a problem... with a wasp nest, and we probably pretty much talk those paper wasps.
Well, again, I've thought about this an awfully lot, and what I've came to is that a couple hundred years ago or whatever, when people were out discovering all these things in nature, you know, there was such a great distance between scientists or whatever that, you know, there wasn't much communication, or if there was, it took an awfully long time to do it. So the solitary wasp, again, people probably will recognize a small little piece of comb about the size of a cupcake or a silver dollar with the exposed cells underneath, and there'll be one or two wasps on there.
But yeah, those are the ones that tend to, like, if you have a porch, and
under the eaves.
In old
cars, door jams, they'll hang around wading pools, and when you see them in the air, they don't really have much to do. They're just sort of lolling about with the breeze. You know, there's not much to care for. There's just a little piece of comb there. But technically, those are the paper wasps. Just that little piece of comb with two or three wasps on there. What you saw when I brought up here, the paper nest, again, those are wasps for sure, and that's paper. That's really paper, but that is not a paper wasp.
Oh, okay.
If I might, Martha, just to get this straight.
Yeah.
What the allergy product does, it triggers an antigen buildup in the autoimmune system specific to the particular venom.
Right. It's like a vaccine.
Well, yeah.
That's made from the wasp venom. And apparently, do they do the same thing with like honeybees? And
oh, sure,
so
you betcha. There's actually, it seems like there's much more. Well, again, you can't quantify that, but sure, honeybees, you bet.
Okay, so.
But I don't. There's so many honeybees versus, and they're so easy to. You can track honeybees, and you can keep them around, and you know you can't do that with the yellow jackets. Or if you can, you're darn good. I don't think it's possible though.
All right. Well. Amazing. And so there are apparently, folks, there are social wasps, and those are ones that live in the big nests. And then there are solitary wasps, and I think that's the paper wasps you were describing, those little combs.
And the mud daubers would be classified as such. Most of the wasps are solitary and only use their sting to paralyze their prey.
Oh, okay.
And yellow jackets are the ones that, you know, again, they can use their sting to defend.
Okay. Now, do we have social as well as solitary bees, Kelly?
Yes. Honeybees are social, and then you have...
And social meaning they live in a group.
Yes, that city that I talked about,
okay,
where they're all working together. It's just like, you know, it's like Seattle, you know, just in one colony, you know, at all different ages, and they have different jobs. There's garbage collectors, there's mortuary bees that drag out the dead bees. They all have different purposes and jobs.
Okay. All right. Now, we are at the end of the first hour already. We are going to run Martha's four-step flea plan, because I'm convinced now the